nine. They go in the nine. The seven is the fix.
Jeff, we just had a problem. We're off.
How do you feel about the flying cats?
Yeah, that's why we're in this conversation. Okay. Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and call the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order. Thank you very much for being here. Today we have a public hearing, a possible work session on House Bill 2317A. We also have two work sessions that were scheduled for today on House Bill 2357A, as well as House Bill 3093A. And we have received information regarding some issues with the two bills that are scheduled for a work session. So first I'm going to ask Jeff to go ahead and go through the process of what you've learned, and we'll talk about what our next steps are.
Chair Brzozinski and members of the committee, we received word from Legislative Council this morning that House Bill 2357A and House Bill 3093A have conflicts with one another because both touch upon concealed handgun laws. Therefore, they've asked that we carry these work sessions in order for them to work out conflict amendments. They do believe that there's a pretty easy fix out there, but they want to make sure that it's okay with all the members prior to doing that. So they've asked that we carry these work sessions over.
All right, thank you. I also want to put on...
If I could ask a question.
Yes.
Before, when we talked about House Bill 2357, we talked about an amendment to make sure that retired officers were not eligible for the affirmative defense if they had committed a crime. Is that amendment also in the works?
Chair Brzezinski and Senator Burdick, that amendment is actually part of this conflicts process. So my hunch is that the amendment resolving conflicts will be coupled with that amendment as well. And I've been assured by Legislative Council that they were working on that. There was a little bit of a personal issue yesterday that stopped them from being able to submit that new language to us, but we're waiting for that as well.
Thank you.
All right. And so the other thing I want to put on the record regarding this, I did speak to Representative Post regarding the issues that has just been put on the record by council. And there's also some issues because there are two amendments that we were looking at under House Bill 3093A, the dash sevens and the dash nines. It's my understanding now that the dash nines may not be necessary or appropriate for this particular bill, and that it may be handled through another vehicle that's in the House side. Accordingly, I also want to check with the Speaker, since that was part of an agreement on a bigger picture, to ensure that we are moving forward the amendments that we need to, and that all parties are in agreement with where we're going on that. So with that, I want to carry over, and because of the procedures that we're now in with the our limited time before the committee shuts down, we will be carrying over these bills and other bills in the future on a daily basis. So we'll be carrying over House Bill 2357A as well as House Bill 3093A until tomorrow. And as I've told individuals that are interested in those bills, it may still not be able to be worked tomorrow, but we do need to be carrying them over on a daily basis. So with that, there will not be any work sessions on those two bills today, and again, they are carried over until tomorrow. All right, at this point, we're going to go ahead and start a public hearing on House Bill 2317A. And Jeff, why don't you give us the overview, please?
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, House Bill 2317A provides that prosecution for the crimes of rape in the first degree, sodomy in the first degree, unlawful sexual penetration in the first degree, and sexual abuse in the first degree may be commenced within 12 years after the commission of the offense. The bill states that if the victim was a minor at the time of the offense, prosecution may be commenced either within 12 years or before the victim attains 30 years of age. The bill prescribes that it applies to offenses committed before, on, or after the act, but that the act does not operate to revive previously barred prosecutions. We do have two amendments before us, the proposed dash A6 amendments, which eliminate the statute of limitations for the aforementioned crimes, and the proposed dash A7 amendments that state that the prosecution may be commenced within 20 years after the commission of the crime.
All right, thank you. So we have a number of individuals who want to give testimony today. I'm going to go from the top here. Aaron Olson, I believe it's Ken Garrett or Garrett?
Garrett.
Yes. And Jessica Watson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. My name is Erin Olson. I'm an attorney in private practice. For the last 10 years, my practice has been exclusively representing crime victims in criminal and civil cases. And for the decade before that, I was a prosecutor for the state and federal governments. I'm here today, though, on behalf of the National Center for Victims of Crime. I am a past board member of that organization and a present member. And I have submitted the written testimony of the Deputy Executive Director of the National Center, Jeff Dion. The testimony supports the Dash 7 amendment that's before you today to House Bill 2317, which is for a 20-year statute of limitations. And I'm not going to repeat the arguments in the written testimony, but I want to talk very briefly about what this bill means to crime victims and why it is that this committee should support a 20-year statute of limitations and not a 12-year statute. The bill that's before you in some form or another will decide how high the initial barrier is to a criminal prosecution. But it's just the first barrier. The other two branches of justice present many other barriers before the deliberative process that determines whether justice actually occurs can take place, and that is the deliberative process of a criminal jury. This body last amended the statute of limitations for serious sex crimes in 1989, for serious adult sex crimes in 1989, when it changed it from 3 to 6 years. But a lot has changed since 1989. As this committee knows. One of those changes, two of those changes actually, had to do with the same statute of limitations and how they applied to child abuse crimes. So that statute is a little bit different. It wouldn't be changed by the amended version. It would be changed by the Dash 7 amendments. The other significant thing I think that's happened since 1989 is that the citizens of the state of Oregon passed two constitutional amendments that are called colloquially the Crime Victims' Rights Amendments. And the first section of Article 1, Section 42 states that the purpose of those amendments was to ensure that a fair balance is struck between the rights of criminal defendants and the rights of crime victims. But one of the other purposes, I think, is more salient to today's discussion, and that purpose is to seek the truth as to the defendant's innocence or guilt. And that truth is barred by the statute of limitations after a certain time. And by setting a barrier that is 12 years, or frankly any barrier, but I understand that no barrier is not politically possible at this point in time. But the statute of limitations serves as an absolute barrier to seeking the truth. And for that reason, I think that you should do better than 12 years. You can do better. And my understanding is that a majority of this body as a whole would do better if given the opportunity. Yesterday or today, the governor of Nevada previously had the lowest statute of limitations for serious sex crimes, which was 4 years. As of yesterday or today, the governor is going to sign a bill that increases the statute of limitations for serious sex crimes in Nevada to 20 years. This is not an area in which Oregon should be in a minority. Oregon should increase its criminal statute of limitations for first-degree sex crimes to at least 20 years. And I ask that you vote on and pass the Dash 7 amendments. Thank you.
Thank you. Who'd like to go next?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Senator Przanski, Vice Chair Cruz, and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, good morning. My name is Ken Garrett. I was born and raised in Portland, Oregon. I am a pastor of Grace Bible Church in downtown Portland. Before I went into the ministry, I was a paramedic in downtown for 23 years. In the precious moments that I have to speak to you this morning, I hope to offer you strong and compelling reason to extend the statute of limitations for these four first-degree sex crimes to 20 years instead of the mere 12 years that has been suggested. More than 30 years ago, in 1984, my wife and I, fresh out of the military, joined a small church in the outskirts of southeast Portland. It was a place where we hoped to find training for our aspirations in ministry, and also some close and authentic friendships and relationships with other young families and young couples that also shared our faith. While we were in that church for 12 years, we had our three daughters. That's what we have, Bryn and Rachel and Grace. And after 12 years in that church, it became very clear to us that the church had declined in just about every way possible. And it'd become a very brutal place, cult-like and controlling, and just a real nasty place to raise a family or be. So in 1996, in August, we decided to leave this church, and we left it. Within a few months of our exit from this church, Bryn and Rachel, our two older girls, now when we left, they were 12, 10, and then we had a 22-month-old. After we left, 4 or 5 months down the road, our two older girls informed us that they had been sexually molested over the years repeatedly by the senior pastor named Michael Spiro. We immediately took the girls to the Portland Police Department, filed a report, and waited for what we assumed would certainly be a very soon arrest and trial and justice. Actually, we waited and nothing happened. We were informed by the prosecutor that the case would not be taken. He elected not to pursue it, not to arrest after an investigation, despite the fact that two more ladies, girls in that church, they were young teens, came forward within those weeks and reported the same abuse. And in the subsequent years, three other girls came forward also. But the Multnomah County prosecutor at the time decided not to take this case because, in his words, it was not considered winnable. It did not give him a high enough certainty of prevailing that he felt that he should take this case on. Of course, we were crushed as a family. Within 2 years, the other three girls had come forward, and yet nothing changed in the prosecutor's stance that he would not take this case. But the terrible failure of this one prosecutor in Multnomah County in 1997 was forcefully addressed in 2013 when another prosecutor, Portland Deputy District Attorney Chris Maskell, believed the girls. She reopened the investigation. She arrested, investigated, prosecuted Pastor Mike Spiro, not because the case was winnable, but because she felt it was simply the right thing to do. However, because of the archaic criminal statute of limitations presently in the state of Oregon, District Attorney Maskell could prosecute Spiro only for the three crimes that he had committed against the youngest of what were now seven victims. Only the youngest still fell within the statute of limitations that would enable him to face justice for what he had done, only to this girl, not to the other six girls, one of whom sits beside me, only for the one, Miss Shannon Clark. And the reason I say their names freely is because these girls had the guts to go to the Oregonian and have their names and pictures of them in the paper as sexual abuse victims. That took backbone, and that's why today I'm standing before you saying their names. Just last month, a jury in Multnomah County found Pastor Mike Spiro guilty of three counts of unlawful sexual penetration in the first degree. But because my daughters reported the crimes against them more than 12 years before this case was reopened in 2013, Pastor Mike could not be prosecuted for what he did to them. He got away with what he did to at least four of the other girls, too. He only stood before a jury and heard that he was guilty for the crimes against one of the girls. I'm here today as a citizen, as a pastor, a husband, and most importantly, as a father, to join the many other voices that you have been hearing and are hearing, who are saying to you that our state's ability to hold accountable a violent sex offender or anyone who abuses young children should not depend on whether the initial report is handled properly or even when the report is made. My young girls, Brynny and Rachel, they were able to tell me and their mother that they had been molested. But like so many children out there, they were able to talk when many children are simply unable to open up about the abuse that they have endured years or even decades afterwards, which is also true of the rape victim. This is not the fault of themselves, but of their assailant, of their abuser, of the criminal. It's not their fault that they would then end up not receiving justice. to deny justice to a victim of sexual crime on the basis of our state's short statute of limitation serves to re-victimize, re-shame, and even reinforce a sick notion in the abuser that what he or she has done, his or her crimes, are not really so bad after all, that they should be maybe forgotten and forgiven, and that there might even be something inherently wrong with his or her victim because they seem to be unable to simply, and these are the words that strike horror into the hearts of a victim, simply move on. You don't move on. Everybody in this room knows that. I'm sure you've heard the sad statistics, the same ones that I have, that at present there's only one state in the United States with a higher incidence of rape than ours, and that's Alaska. It is even more chilling to note that the vast majority of sexual crimes don't go reported. And if they do, it is often years and years after turmoil, stress, anxiety, unaddressed traumas and fears, all the result of having carried on the shoulder the soul-crushing weight of being the victim, survivor, yes, but victim of sexual abuse. It has been argued that a shorter statute of limitations will somehow encourage more victims to report their crime, that it will compel them to come forward sooner if they know that the clock is running and will soon run out on them. This is cruel. It's a laughable myth in the face of many years that it takes for a person to finally come forward with this. I want to tell you something. By the way the law is set up, when a crime occurs, it's like there's a huge sand clock, one of those dials with the sands coming down through it. And from the time that crime occurs, legally, there's the sands, and they start falling. And the victim, usually so completely devastated by what has happened to her or him, does not look at that clock. Does not think about that clock. A 13, a 14, a 15-year-old girl, an 18-year-old college freshman does not want to sit down with her friends in the dorm room and talk about the horrific thing that a pastor did to her when she was 7 years old. That's not what happens. But I'll tell you one person that keeps looking at the clock, and it's the abuser. Because he knows that a day comes when he looks at the clock and the sand has all run through, and it's dry as a bone on the top. And he's made it. He's dodged a bullet. Our daughters came forward. They did the right thing. And they were failed once by a prosecutor who did not do his job. And they were failed a second time by a cruel brick wall in the state of Oregon called the statute of limitations. If the statute of limitations that we hope for today existed today, the molester of my daughters and their five girlhood friends would have been prosecuted and found guilty for all his crimes against all seven of the girls. They all would have experienced justice in the same degree, personally, instead of just the youngest of them, for which they thank God it happened. But it did happen, not as if it really should have. A type of justice was served, but not the better justice that would have cared for all the victims of this man who now sits in prison, just completing his first month there. Today, you have before you the priceless opportunity of ensuring that from now on in our state of Oregon, when victims of sexual crimes are finally able to lift their heads out of the years of gloom and shame and pain and depression and all the rest, when they finally come forward, when they finally have the guts to raise their nose above the waterline and say, this happened to me, you have the opportunity today to develop a just system of law that has so much more to say to these victims than simply, we're sorry, it's too late. This is a climate that we truly do have the opportunity and ability to change. I thank you for your time and for this opportunity, and I respectfully urge you to amend House Bill 2317 to extend the criminal statute of limitations for four of the first degree sex offenses to 20 years, not to what it is now, a short 12 years. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Przanski and members of the committee, I'm Jessica Watson, and I'm here to support the 20-year amendment. Thank you for allowing me to speak in front of you today. I was molested not just once, although that would have been bad enough, but dozens of times throughout my childhood. That's the letter I've started writing my parents at least a dozen times since I left the church I grew up in most of my childhood and into adulthood. But each time I didn't send it. They knew generally that it happened, but I never could tell them the specific details. I could never tell them the feeling of my pastor's finger inside of my vagina, or how his red wine-stained lips disgusted me when he would French kiss me. How it was just a normal part of my life to sleep in bed with him and wake up to him fondling my budding breasts and ask me to touch his penis, all while telling me how much he loved me and how good I felt to him. Those memories are forever burned into my brain, no matter how many years have passed. When several families left the church in 1996, including Ken and his family, other girls came forward about their abuse. They went to the police and filed a report in 1997, but because I was still in the church, I felt I needed to protect my abuser. I didn't tell the police then all the awful things that he did to me because I wanted to protect him and also because I wanted to protect myself, because he controlled everything in my world, where I lived, the activities I could participate in, how I was disciplined, and who my boyfriends could or could not be. He was Pastor Mike, Michael Spiro, the head of the religious community in which my family lived, and he controlled how I lived for nearly 20 years. It wasn't until just after my 30th birthday that I thought maybe I was healed enough to go to the police. I had worked with a therapist for years and finally felt strong enough emotionally and mentally and stable enough in my life circumstances. I was settled into a life as a wife and mother of two boys and running my own business. I had heard the term statute of limitations before, but I didn't really know the specifics for the crime against me. So then when I did some research online, I learned that the statute of limitations had just passed. I was devastated knowing that my abuser would never have to face the legal consequences for what he'd done to me. But a month ago, I told a Multnomah County jury what Pastor Mike did, and so did six of his other victims. We got to tell our story because of the efforts of a man who once sat where you are now sitting, Kelly Clark. In 2013, he encouraged us to report everything that happened to us to the police, and he prodded the Portland Police Bureau until they reopened the investigation, but by then I was already over 30. However, there was one girl that was under 30 and had new information not reported to law enforcement back in 1997. Although I was able to testify in her case, and that was the first time that I ever told my full story to anyone in law enforcement, he will never serve time for what he did to me or his five other victims. If the 20-year statute of limitations that is before you today had been in effect when the Portland police reopened their investigation in 2013, Pastor Mike could have been held accountable for what he did to all seven of us. During Pastor Mike's criminal trial, the defense attorney suggested that all of us were motivated by the possibility of a civil recovery, because we all know that it is still possible thanks to the changes this legislature has made to the civil statute of limitations for child abuse. But that is not the accountability that we wanted. We wanted justice, which meant to us a prison sentence, because that is the only way to protect the grandchildren from his followers, or of his followers from him. I know this because my parents are still in Pastor Mike's community, and because my parents discouraged the prosecution of Pastor Mike in 1997, and because they testified at his trial last month on his behalf, saying they didn't believe he had sexually abused anyone, including me. I know one of the reasons given by the opponents of a 20-year criminal statute of limitations is that victims should be encouraged to promptly report the crime. But sexual abuse is different. It is a physically and psychologically coercive act or series of acts that is disabling The disability is caused by the abuser, and we should have as much time as we need to escape from it and then to overcome it. It took me years to not only disclose everything that Pastor Mike did to me, but to even realize just how badly the abuse affected my life, my struggle with depression, my severe body image and self-esteem issues, and then to feel safe, healthy, and strong enough to speak up. But I know now that that was not my fault. And I know a lot of people before me have explained to this community why victims of child abuse, particularly those like me who are abused by someone in a position of power and trust, don't disclose for a long time. Virtually all of those reasons are attributable to the abuser, and giving sex offenders the benefit of the delayed disclosure for which they are responsible defies logic, reason, and fundamental fairness. As I heard someone say yesterday, don't reward the criminal for being sneaky. And I'd like to add, and don't punish the victim for needing time to heal. Please vote to approve the 20-year statute of limitations. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Jessica and Ken, thank you very much for coming forward and giving your stories. Let's see if there's any questions. Senator Thatcher first.
Well, I just think in the instances you described here that even 20 years would be potentially cruel. I think there shouldn't be any statute of limitations, especially when you can bring forward evidence like that, and there were reports made in time, and that, I don't know. I just think in those instances we should really look at having none, zero. It shouldn't have to depend on DNA evidence being present. That description that you gave, I think, would, justify a zero on statute of limitation, as in not having one.
Amen.
That's just my comment, but.
Thank you. Yeah, let's see. First, I think I saw Senator Gelser.
Yes.
And then Senator Burdick.
I just wanted to thank you for coming today. And Jessica, in particular, I followed your story and was really overwhelmed by your courage. And
thank you.
I'm sorry for what happened to you as a child and what you went through in that trial without the support that you deserved. And thank you for having the courage to stand up for
thank you.
Others.
Thank you.
All right, Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I wanted to thank you as well. But I remember, and I don't even know which cases were involved, but early in my Senate career, I remember that we pretty drastically extended the statute of limitations for sex crimes against children. And so I was a little confused by the testimony because it was my understanding that if the crime was against a child, that the statute of limitation was longer, and I wanted to ask our counsel if he could shed some light on that.
Chair Brzozowski and Senator Burdick, so if the victim is under 18 at the time of the offense under ORS 131125 sub 2, the prosecution can be commenced any time before the victim attains age 30, or within 12 years of a report to a law enforcement agency or the Department of Human Services, and it's whichever of those occurs first. So there is an extension from the normal 6 years if somebody is under 18 at the time of the offense, which can go all the way until age 30, depending on the circumstances. We also have, under sub 9 of the same statute, if identification occurs as part of DNA evidence that's discovered, prosecution for first-degree sex crimes can be commenced with no statute of limitations, whereas second-degree sex crimes, it's a 25-year statute of limitations.
Okay, thank you.
And just for the record, that would be sub 8 for that. Sub 9 actually gives another precursor on when DNA has to be, those charges have to be commenced.
Thank you.
Just for the record.
So, you know, we can't really go into the detail. I mean, we haven't seen the court files, obviously, but it mystifies me why a prosecutor would not take a case with a child. I guess the 1997 part of it may have been before we extended the statute of limitations, but certainly after that, it's very hard to understand why a prosecutor wouldn't move forward for one of these grievous crimes. And I wanted to thank you again for having the courage to share your story. It's very compelling.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? thank you all very much for coming forward. I'm going to go ahead and call up four people at this point: Steve Dole, Hazel Flores, Annie Clark, and Danielle Tudor. And we'll need to bring a fourth chair up. Good morning. I'm not sure who would like to start off.
Chair Przanski, Vice Chair Cruz, and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Good morning. My name is Annie Clark, and I'm a former employee and researcher at the University of Oregon. Although I now live in Washington, D.C., I came back today because I was personally inspired by the work of the survivors who have been denied access to justice simply because their cases didn't fit an arbitrary number of days. However, unlike many others who speak today, I never reported my rape to the police. Like other survivors, I was scared, I was young, and making my way through a culture that told me what happened to me was my fault. The first person whom I officially reported to was a staff member at my undergraduate institution. This person told me that rape was like a football game, and I needed to look back on the game to see what I would do differently in that situation. I didn't speak publicly after that instance for the next 7 years, and it took me almost 6 years to the entire length of Oregon's statute of limitations to even tell most members of my family. Women aged 16 to 24, which is now my little sister's age group, are the most likely to experience sexual violence. It is that age when students are moving away from home, navigating college campuses, and trying to figure out their life's paths that they are the most vulnerable. Colleges have even nicknamed that period of time the red zone because so many students are sexually assaulted. And when survivors reach out for help, they are often turned away by their deans and by the very institutions, the church, the military, or their colleges, which are supposed to protect them. I now travel the country with a film titled The Hunting Ground about campus sexual assault, and I run a national nonprofit called End Rape on Campus, which directly services survivors of sexual and gender-based violence. Unfortunately, though, I still hear stories like mine every single day. And when I came forward, I received letters from women and men all across the country, including at Oregon, whose prosecutors didn't take their cases, who, when they came forward, they were not believed. It broke my heart to write women back who were raped in 1979, 1984, and say, I'm sorry, the statute of limitations has run out on your case. And there is no reason based in law or research that suggests extending the statute of limitations is a bad idea. Rather, it suggests exactly the opposite. And extending the statute of limitations or eliminating it entirely does not infringe on due process rights. It does not take away the rights of the accused. Extending statute of limitations gives survivors more time to process what's happened to them and make the decision what's best for them. Extending the statute of limitations makes sure that a rape kit backlog is not the reason someone's case does not go to trial. Extending the statute of limitations makes sure that in cases with multiple victims, only some victims count because of an arbitrary date. And research tells us that most offenders are serial predators, and they're able to rape with impunity because there's rarely any consequence. Extending the statute of limitation can make it easier for police and detectives to track these trends and establish patterns of behavior and identify and apprehend offenders. So, in a country where half of the states in our union already have no statute of limitations on this issue, I respectfully ask you, why are we so far behind in Oregon? Even the Clery Act, which is the federal law that's been on the books since the early 1990s, which requires colleges and universities to report crimes on campus, has no statute of limitations. There are already insurmountable barriers to reporting and receiving justice, which we've heard already this morning, even when there is DNA and, quote, everything is done right. So if we want a safe society, we want fair trials, why are we creating more barriers for survivors instead of breaking them down? I'm here today because the last time the statute of limitations was updated was the year I was born. I'm here today because I'm privileged enough to share my story with you without the fear of retaliation from my community. Extending the statute of limitations will be one of the many things that help give survivors a fair chance, and there shouldn't be a statute of limitation on justice. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and please extend Oregon's statute of limitations to 20 years or eliminate it entirely. Thank you.
Chairman Pruzanski, Vice Chair Cruz, and members of the committee. My name is Hazel Flores, and first off, I would like to thank the committee for providing me the opportunity to speak on behalf of this bill. As an undergraduate of Reed College and Sarah Lawrence College, I've conducted literature research on the biological elements of trauma. I've also attended workshops provided by the YWCA in Portland and provided translation services for Raphael House. Based on the research I encountered over the last few years, I find that the underlying issues of trauma, the biological changes that is, greatly impact the well-being of sexual assault victims. In discussing trauma, individuals can either suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, which is what we commonly hear of, but they can also suffer from some of, but not all of, the symptoms of trauma, rendering them traumatized to a certain degree. Symptoms include flashbacks, nightmares, emotional numbing, and repression, as well as physical ailments. One of the largest psychological symptoms of sexual assault is the loss of control and the feeling of helplessness. By forcing a timeline, we render individuals even more helpless, when, in fact, all effective therapies instead aim to increase the feeling of control in victims. Questions, the type of questions that are asked when you go in to report, can trigger these memories. And the important thing to remember is that memory encoding in individuals who are victims of this kind of trauma is very different. Not only does the brain chemistry change, affecting serotonin and dopamine levels, which affect mood, but the structural biology in the brain is also changed. So the limbic system and the HPA axis control our reactions to fear, and they're completely affected and can even moderate changes to other structures such as the hippocampus, which is also largely important in implicating, or largely important in fear and arousal states. So trauma victims, basically this means that trauma victims develop emotional deregulations and are sensitized to stress. So they're constantly in a hyper-aroused state. Their body views stress, even harmless things that most people wouldn't freak out about, as something that is dangerous. They even respond to this harmless stimuli as if it were a trigger for trauma, and sometimes even respond as if they're being re-exposed to the trauma. So their body is responding the exact same way it responded to the original stimuli to begin with, and this can further traumatize and increase the negative effects. So as it stands, neuroscience is advancing quickly in these areas, and there's been a lot of research in the last decade. However, it is impossible to identify PTSD or lower levels of trauma by a one-size-fits-all box. PTSD can also wax and wane in its symptomology over time, sometimes lessening for a few years while causing an issue once again later on. Given this, the statute of limitations should take this under consideration, and having a six-year limit doesn't do this. I believe all victims would benefit from this statute of limitations. So thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you, Hazel.
Chair Pruzanski, Vice Chair Cruz, and members of the committee, thank you for letting me speak today in regards to House Bill 2317. You saw Annie Clark here speak, I'm just going to list off some of the organizations that I've reached out to around the country who definitely are watching what happens in other states with the statute of limitations, because it is more and more coming to the forefront. In fact, one of the largest organizations in the country, Joyful Heart Foundation, which is founded by Mariska Hargitay, as I have been communicating with them, the last email I got from them said that it was an issue that was definitely coming to the forefront and an issue that they definitely were going to get more involved in. And they are the ones that originated in the backlog on rape kits, which Oregon is currently looking at doing and taking care of. So some of those organizations are Annie's, like End Rape on Campus, Joyful Heart Foundation, HEART, Jane Doe No More, the Ms. Foundation, National Organization for Women, Test 400K, the National Crime Victims Law Institute, RAIN, National Network to End Domestic Violence. These are all organizations that I have reached out to. Many of them have written you letters regarding the statute of limitations here in Oregon.
Danielle, so, I need you to put your name on the record, please.
Oh, yes. Danielle Tudor.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, and then I am networked with organizations all throughout the state who deal with victims of sexual violence, and I'm networked with over probably two dozen. So I've done some traveling around the state as well as been in contact with these organizations just to get a feel for where they are on the statute of limitations, and overwhelmingly, whether it's a private citizen or an organization or individuals who work for them, overwhelmingly, the drive, the what people want to see is at least 20 years or no statute of limitations. So definitely there's been a lot of debate over this bill. We can't deny that. But as most of you know, I was a victim of the jogger rapist Richard Troy Gilmore. And the night I was raped, I worked with a police sketch artist on a composite sketch of my attacker, and it became a piece of evidence which led to his arrest and conviction almost 8 years later. And at that time, the statute of limitations in Oregon was only 3 years. And so because it was so short, Richard Gilmore was not prosecuted for all of his nine known victims. And in fact, law enforcement at the time suspected that he could be responsible for up to as many as 100 rapes. But they did not pursue any of those cases because the statute of limitations had already expired. So consequently, not only was I locked out of the justice system, but seven other known victims were as well. So the words justice and healing will never be used in the same sentence for at least eight of us victims of Richard Gilmore. As we know, in 1989 is the last time our statute of limitations on rape was extended, and that was to 6 years. And even at that time, it still didn't, and it still doesn't offer justice for most of Richard Gilmore's victims. And Richard Gilmore was a rapist that was very clever, and he knew how to avoid leaving DNA evidence behind. So other evidence actually became key to his conviction. Those were the composite sketch, a fingerprint, a lineup at the Multnomah County Justice Center, and by Gilmore's own admissions. So as many of you know, Richard Gilmore was also on his way to become a police officer. So in the ongoing conversation about how long rape victims deserve justice, some people maintain that rape victims, after being raped, have a moral obligation and an obligation to society to move forward in the justice system to receive justice swiftly. And after all, that's what the rapist deserves. But the onus has been placed entirely on the shoulders of victims of rape to deal with both the trauma of having been raped and to deal immediately with the justice system. And this simply is not reality for someone who has just been raped. In fact, I think it becomes a deterrent for rape victims to actually report. I have found that people don't always understand the effects of rape unless they themselves have been sexually assaulted. It's nearly impossible to put yourself in the place of a victim and understand how that being penetrated in the most private parts of your body by another person is different than any other crime and trauma. But it is. A rapist counts on humiliation, degradation, and shame to keep victims living in silence and isolation. And certainly in my own life, I was silent for 20 years before I came forward as a named victim. But that rape also left its mark of fear on me. And since then, I have to take extraordinary measures to even feel safe in my own home. Chair Prozanski, I have met with you on a couple of occasions to discuss your hesitancy about a statute of limitations set at 20 years. Now, you've stated on several occasions that you want a work group of certified smart people to look at all of the statutes of limitations in Oregon and the criminal code rather than considering them piecemeal or statute by statute. And you're interested in possibly adjusting any and all statute of limitations that need changing. And you also have told me that you want me to come back next session or the next one to get the remaining 8 years. And my response to that is that if 20 years is going to be good next year or in 2017, then it's good this session. It's good now. I have met with almost every single senator at this Capitol. Only a few have I actually had to meet with their assistant. And I need and want this committee to know there is overwhelming support amongst your colleagues for a 20-year statute of limitations on rape. I have confirmed that if the bill asking for a new 20-year statute of limitations on rape went to the Senate floor tomorrow, it would be voted on and it would pass. You've received numerous letters from citizens around Oregon, organizations in Oregon who work with rape victims, and from organizations around the country who work with victims on a daily basis. And all of them have been expressing their support for 20 years or more. And I hope and trust that the will of Oregonians and of your own colleagues in the Senate will not be ignored. Oregonians expect transparency in our government, where the state legislature is built upon a majority and not a dictatorship. But that is exactly what's happening with this bill. The will and determination of a few is dictating and driving the outcome of this bill. The bill at 20 years is a compromise and a modest bill, asking for the worst of the worst of sex crimes, rape one, sodomy one, unlawful penetration with a foreign object, and sex abuse one. I now understand that a work group is being put together to look at the pros and cons of extending Oregon's statute of limitations on rape from 12 years to 20. Many of the people that you want in this work group and want to participate already are for a 20-year statute of limitations or elimination. So in the words of numerous state senators that I have talked to, I have heard over and over and over, it's a no-brainer. In my opinion, the work group that's being put together to look at going from 12 years to 20 years is nothing more than a smokescreen to bury any more action on this bill. And I'm a little bit confused by the offer, Chair Prozanski, for this work group, because on numerous occasions you have also said that you are against piecemealing the statutes. But yet if we're forming a work group to look at the statute of limitations on rape going from 12 to 20 years, and we're looking at that specifically, then we are piecemealing. So I'm a little bit confused, I guess, and maybe you can clarify that for me, where we're headed with that. But right now, finally, we are seeing a movement across the country where victims of rape are using their voices to bring change to a crime that has remained nameless and faceless for far too long. Along with those voices will come change. And part of that change is a longer statute of limitations on rape, where perpetrators are held accountable for a more reasonable amount of time. And as I've kept fighting for 20 years, I've heard the words in my mind that I taught my young sons as they were growing up, and those words were always go for your best. Believe in yourself and you can conquer anything, and never back down when you stand for truth and justice and what you know to be right, and never give up. And the more I've had to ponder on those words, the more I've been convinced by what I have taught my sons. So what example would I be setting for them if I back down now and settle just for the easy 12 years when, in my heart, I know it's not right and I know rape victims deserve more than that? And then I had to think, how would I feel down the road when a rape victim could get justice or cannot get justice if we pass 12 years, we hit year 13, and we get a victim that comes back and says, I can't get justice because it's only 12 years. And I don't want to be that person that has to say, well, I'm sorry, I settled for the easy 12. I want to be that person that can say I fought the best that I could to get 20 years or an elimination of the statute of limitations. So I continue to ask you to pass a 20-year statute of limitations or none at all on rape. But it's not for me. It's for them. And given the rate at which rape occurs every 2 minutes in the U.S., there will be, you mark it, many more thems. In fact, as you've heard, Oregon is second in the nation for rape. We're second in the nation for sex offender population per capita. We're second in the nation on human trafficking. Yet we have one of the lowest statute of limitations on rape. Even going to 12, we are still in the bottom. That still puts us in the lower third of the rest of the country. So I would like to respectfully ask this committee to join the majority of your colleagues, what Oregonians want, and the vote to change Oregon's statute of limitations on rape to 20 years. And Senator Posansky, as I've thought about this bill and how I could connect with you on the passion and the heart that is behind what I'm doing for this bill, the only thing I could think of is if you think in your own mind how you feel and how you felt about your gun bill and how passionate you were about that and how passionate you went after that and got what you wanted. And that is the only thing that I've been able to think of that can help you understand how passionate I am about justice for rape victims in Oregon and wanting to do our very best. Am I happy with 20 years? Can I tell you that I won't be back to eliminate it completely? No, I can't promise you that. I can't promise you that I won't be back and ask to eliminate it, even if you give me 20 years. But 20 years is certainly a huge step in the right direction versus 12 years. And I respectfully ask you to please support negative 7 amendment? That we have on there, -7, that is for the 20 years. I respectfully ask you to do that.
Thank you.
Chair Prusansky, Vice Chair Cruz, and members of the committee, Steve Dole with Crime Victims United of Oregon. I'm president of Crime Victims United, have been a member since 1994 and have been president since around 2000. Crime Victims United was founded in 1983 by Bob and Dee Dee Coons as a result of the murder of their daughter in San Francisco in 1980. At the time that Bob and Dee Dee created and founded Crime Victims United, the statute of limitations in Oregon was 3 years on these first-degree rape crimes, sex offenses, the four sex offenses we're talking about here. Crime Victims United was involved before I became a member in changing that statute of limitations in 1989 to 6 years. Dee Dee was one of the people who was in the forefront of making that change, Dee Dee Coons. In 2009, Crime Victims United brought a bill to get rid of the statute of limitations when there's DNA evidence in the crimes of rape in the first degree, sodomy in the first degree, unlawful penetration in the first degree, and we were successful in doing that. I only tell you that because of part of our history. Now, you know me as someone that comes down to the Capitol to work to change laws or to stop what we perceive as bad laws from happening that affect crime victims' rights, sentencing, public safety, not only the crime victims of the past, of today, but to prevent crime victims, to prevent people becoming crime victims in the future. What some of you know, but many don't, is that we do a lot of work outside of the Capitol building directly with crime victims and helping them through the system. And I have to tell you, and I hope this comes out right, because I certainly don't want to offend anyone in this room who's been a victim of rape or been a victim of us, but the most difficult thing I've found of all the victims that we work with, and we work with primarily victims of violent crime, but sometimes victims of property crimes, identity theft victims, burglary victims, but generally victims of violent crimes. But I find it most difficult to sit with a person who's been raped, or a mother or father who has had a child that's been raped or molested. It's not because of the person. It's because the crime itself, I can't wrap my mind around it. I have a very hard time dealing with what goes through a person's mind that does this act. And I think we need to remember that, you know, these crimes are, while they're sexual crimes, they're not about sex. They're about control over another human being. They're about asserting power over another human being. They're about the anger of a human being being manifested in a terrible way against a victim. And they're about degrading that victim and humiliating that victim. Now, others have mentioned here today, people talk about you got to get over it. You know, it's this blame the victim mentality that's very troublesome to me. I've heard mothers tell me, you know, didn't you get a sense of this guy? What were you thinking about letting your daughter or your son be exposed to this gym teacher, or this baseball coach, or this pastor? I've heard women say, people talk to them and say, well, why'd you put yourself in that situation? Why'd you dress like that? Why'd you go to that place? You should have known better. It's not the victim's fault. It's the criminal's fault, in this case, sex criminals. So what do we have? Get over it? We have victims who suffer post-traumatic stress syndrome, who suffer depression, broken relationships and other relationship problems, drug and alcohol abuse, cutting, and sometimes even suicide, sadly. You know, my daughter, like Chairman Przanski's sister, was a murder victim. And the people that committed these crimes took their lives. But the people who commit rape and commit sexual molestation, they commit a murder also. They murder a person's spirit. And they change their lives indelibly and forever. And I would say this, that even those who appear as they are doing very well continue to deal with some of these issues that I brought up before. So a longer statute of limitations would give rape victims more time. Once they've reported their assault and have a rape kit done, they can take more time to gather their strength before they face their perpetrator and defense in court. A longer statute of limitations would encourage more victims to report and to seek justice. And a longer statute of limitations would discourage potential sex offenders. Right now, a smart rapist can dodge arrest in Oregon for 6 years and carry on scot-free. Why do we want to go to 12? I don't know. There's no magic numbers out there. I happened to read, and I don't mean to misinterpret this, but I read a newspaper article this morning in which I believe you mentioned, Chair Przanski, that we wanted to take a look at evidence-based research on this. And, you know, I did a lot of Googling this morning, and I called a college professor, and I called the leader of a major national crime victims group. And I discovered the same thing from all three sources. There's no evidence-based research to be found on selecting a number for the statute of limitations. As one of the witnesses mentioned today, 25 states have no statute of limitations. Six states have 15 to 25 years. So we've got 31 states in this country with either no statute of limitations or 15 to 25 years. As Ms. Olson noted, yesterday in the state of Nevada, the governor signed a 20-year statute of limitations into law. They were at four. They were the lowest in the country. This is going one way and one way only. It's not going the other way. I'll sum up what I have to say. It always bothers me to a great degree and concerns me when I see other issues that go around in the legislature and that determine what happens with crime victims. That there's other issues in play. I don't know what they are. I have no idea. I've never been a senator or representative. Don't plan on it. But I respect what you do. However, I don't know if it's taxes. I don't know if it's revenue. I don't know if it's education. I don't know if it's the environment. I don't know if it's firearms. I don't know if it's highway taxes. But whatever those deals are, whatever those machinations are, don't balance those on the backs of crime victims, in this case rape victims, child molestation victims. I'm asking you to do the right thing here. I'm asking you to amend this bill today and let it be voted onto the floor as 20 years. Because as Tudor mentioned, we've got a vote count. Over 20 of your colleagues will vote for this bill right now as 20 years. And that's what we're asking you to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chair, could you talk about that?
We'll talk about it when we get to the work session part.
Okay. Well, I would like to know how we got to the 12 years, actually. Do you know?
Yeah, we'll talk about it in
You'll
the work
talk
session.
About that. All right.
I'll wait till the work session part.
Thank you very much. Our next two witnesses I have is Brenda Tracy and Jackie Swanson.
Chairman Przanski, Vice Chair Cruz, and members of the committee, my name is Jacqueline Swanson. I'm an attorney at Crew Jancy LLP, formerly O'Donnell Clark & Crew LLP. Kelly Clark, who was actually mentioned earlier today in testimony, was actually our founding partner. And I'm here today, of course, to continue in his great steps to support victims across the state of Oregon. I'm not going to take much of your time today because I want to make sure that Brenda has enough time to testify and fully express her opinions on this matter, of which I know she has many, and they are very articulate, as always. And we've also submitted written testimony. But I'll just say that I certainly agree with all of the other testimony that you've heard today. Yes, 20 years is preferable to 12, and yes, an indefinite statute of limitation is preferable to 20. But as I understand it, and please do correct me if I'm wrong, the issue that we're addressing today is not whether or not the statute of limitations needs to be extended. Everyone agrees that it certainly does. It's a question of how much do we do today, and how much can we do today. And I know that we've heard testimony that there are other members of the Senate who would happily vote for 20, which is wonderful news. The only question I would have, and I don't know the answer, is what happens if it doesn't pass in the House? Because I, as I understand it, the amendment would have to go back to the House. And I think that's really kind of where our concern lies, just as a pragmatic matter. If there's support for it for 20 years or more in the House, wonderful. But if there's not, it seems that no matter what we do today, no matter what decision you make, we still have a lot of work to do on this issue. We have a lot of work to do when it comes to reporting rates of sexual assault and sexual violence. We have a lot of work to do when it comes to ending the rape kit backlog. We have a lot of work to do when it comes to extending more statute of limitations in criminal and civil for adult and child victims of sexual violence. Regardless of whether the bill comes out today as 12 or 20 or indefinite, I think that here we are presented with a wonderful opportunity to do something good for victims across the state of Oregon. And I think it's going to be a win no matter how we look at it, because we will be coming back. We'll come back next session and the session after and as many times as we need to, if it comes out as 12 today, in order to try to extend it further. But 12 would greatly, even 12 would greatly help those victims whose statutes of limitations are due to expire before the end of next session. So for that reason, I at least do feel strongly that if it's a question of, you know, 20 or indefinite or nothing at this point, especially because we're so late in the session, then 12 would certainly be preferable to it remaining at 6, especially for all those victims who won't otherwise have the opportunity to come forward later. And with that, I'll turn it over to Brenda.
Hi, Chair Prozanski and Vice Chair Senator Cruz and committee. So there's been...
Brenda, I need you to put your name on the record.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I'm Brenda Tracy. Sorry, I'm very nervous. So I would like to first start by just explaining my history with statute of limitations. And I know I always cry, but I gave you a police report, and I have not previously ever talked about this, but the first time I heard the word statute of limitations, I was 12. When I was 9, I had a babysitter who would watch me at night. I was a third grader. I went to Scott's Elementary School here in Salem. And one of these evenings that my babysitter was watching me, her boyfriend came over. And that night, as every night, I had a nightly routine. I went and I got my pajamas on and brushed my teeth and went to bed. And on this particular night, I got my pajamas on. And I remember my pajamas because they were, I don't know if you remember, like those gunny sack type dresses. It was like a long nightgown and it buttoned up, and brushed my teeth and went to bed. And that night I woke up, I'm not sure why, but her boyfriend was standing next to the bed looking at me. And I didn't understand what he was doing there. And he very aggressively tore the blankets off of me and laid his entire body on top of me. In the police report, you'll see that he was over 6 feet tall and 200 pounds. I was a third grader, so I couldn't move. And when he pulled my nightgown up because it buttoned at the neck, my arms got pinned next to my head under my nightgown. And he raped me. I was scared of him, so I didn't tell anyone. He lived near me. Sometimes I would see him watching me walk home from the bus stop. We moved a couple years later, and I felt like I needed to tell someone, so I told my mom, and at the time, it was a big deal. I was 12 at this time, and I remember feeling like my whole world was going to change once I told my mom what happened, and I expected something really big to happen. I didn't know what it was, but I expected something huge to happen, and a few days later, my mom came to me and said, "Brenda, I'm sorry, there's nothing that can be done. The statute of limitations is up."
And I didn't know at 12 years old what statute of limitations meant. All I heard was nothing is going to be done. And in the police report, I highlighted that section where it says the statute of limitations was up. Back then it was 3 years. And nothing was done. And my parents didn't know how to help me. So we all just pretended like it didn't happen. And I never spoke about it again until recently. Because then 12 years later, I was drugged and gang raped by 4 men. I reported that rape. I didn't make the same mistake I did when I was 9. I reported promptly. I got a rape kit. And the people that were in charge of helping me decided not to. So as I did when I was 9, I went back to pretending like nothing happened. Until 16 years later, which was just this last year, when I couldn't be silent anymore and live under the shame that I was feeling. Through different circumstances, I met John Canzano and I told him my story about what had happened to me, the gang rape in Corvallis. And he wrote an article on it. And I remember specifically, I think it was maybe a week or two before the article came out, John called me and he said, "Brenda, I'm sorry, but nothing can be done. The statute of limitations is up." And I remember at that moment, I remembered my mom saying the same thing. And I can't describe to you what that feels like. Five men have raped me in my lifetime. And I have never... I will never see justice for any of it. The only person who has suffered for their crimes is me. There has been a lot of stuff going on around this bill and this amendment, and my position has just been that I want it extended. 6 years is so short, and would I like 20 years? Yes. Would I like no statute? Yes, of course I would. But do I want to stay at 6? Do I want to take a risk that something's not passed and we go back to 6? No, I don't. If I have to deal with 12, which is short, which is not the best case scenario, then I will. I will continue to fight. I will continue to be on whatever work group I can. I will continue to try to foster relationships here. I just cannot stay at 6. And that is my only concern. And I know that some people feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm not advocating hard enough or I'm not doing the right thing, but I'm only here to speak for myself. I don't speak for anyone else. Just myself and my own life story. And I just... staying at 6 is not okay to me. I think that's everything. I don't think I have anything else to say. Does anyone have any questions?
Yeah. Thank you for your statements. Questions?
No, thank you.
No, thanks. Thank you very much. The last two people I have scheduled to testify that signed up are Gil Meyer and Tom Cermak. I'm going to ask you to try to focus on what needs to be said and limited. I have members that need to be leaving here for other obligations.
Thank you, Chair Brzozinski, members of the committee. Mr. Chair, I do really well on a deadline. What are you saying? Okay. All right. Firstly, we would, OCDLA would like to publicly thank two proponents of this bill, and that's Danielle Tudor and Brenda Tracy. They approached us early on in the session. They knew that their proposal would strike at core concerns and values of ours, and they made themselves available to our legislative committee. We did have, I felt, a very good heart-to-heart conversation. We introduced them to our world. They introduced us to theirs, and it was the optimal of, I think, two polar positions getting together and having a very good disclosing, robust discussion. In the final analysis, and the concern was, is there a middle ground? Could we find something that would honor the concerns of those who really do have a legitimate defense, but where evidence may dissipate or go away? And we just didn't know how to find one. And so we now are in a position where we're saying we think the statute of limitations needs to stay at six. And we've listened to all this testimony, and we've taken it all in and absorbed it. In our world, though, we see a very unfortunate and unpleasant truth. All allegations of sexual assault don't look the same. Some simply are not true. Some simply are not accurate. And the way in which the criminal justice system today resolves that is through tangible evidence that exists and that can be found shortly after the allegation is raised. Oregon's recently, I'm going to say 6 weeks ago, saw a woman in Woodburn allege that she had been gang raped by four Latino males as she was delivering the morning paper. 3 days after that allegation, much to the terror of the people in the community about that claim, 3 days later, there was a press release she had made it up. Why did she make it up? I do not know.
Gail, I need you to put your name on the record.
Thank you.
The group.
I thought I had. I apologize. Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers. Cases today are not brought, or they're dismissed by the prosecution, or the jury acquits because of tangible evidence that exists that can refute the allegation. Examples. There's a case, a woman says she goes over to this man's house. She had seen him on several occasions at his house. They had dinner at his house. One night they went over to watch an event, a concert in a city park. They came back to his house. She alleges she was raped on that day. So it was, we were able later to identify the particular day because she identified it as the same day as they'd gone to a park and watched a concert. She made the claim of rape about 4 or 5 months after the event. My client had an odd book. You know when you go to inns and you write in handwritten notes about, oh my goodness, so nice to stay here, etc. This was half a diary, half that. And there were entries made by this woman in her own handwriting and describing the events on that night, coming back, having dinner. But then there were entries in her own handwriting for 2, 3, 4 other occasions when she came to the client's house and was saying, oh, when we had dinner, it was so lovely, and the halibut and the breeze and through the window and all that. When the detective came, of course, we showed him the entries in her own handwriting that were very inconsistent with her statement, which was the rape occurred and she did not see him again. Those charges were never brought. I don't know how long my client would have retained that piece of paper. But that made that allegation not be brought. Other case, woman alleges she goes into, she invites a man into her dorm room. They lie on her bed. She says she was rendered unconscious. She does not know how. It was clear when she woke up sex had occurred, and she alleged rape. The client was arrested and charged with rape. The client said, oh no, yes, I went into her room, and yes, we did have sex, but whoa, she was conscious. We were both talking on our phones, lying side by side on her bed, engaged in our social media, and we were watching stuff on her YouTube. So they got the phone records of the individual, the woman, and sure enough, multiple text messages, 6-minute gap, multiple text messages. She was clearly conscious. She was clearly awake. She may have been in a blackout. We don't know. But the text messages disproved her claim that she was unconscious and corroborated him that she was conscious. Those text messages go off Verizon's server after 3 years. Other cases have been won in front of a jury because of text messages made by someone after an event, describing the event. There was a case not long ago in Hood River. A girl alleged rape. Her text messages showed she was bragging about the dimensions of the man's genitalia and how many climaxes she had had. The district attorney chose to continue to prosecute. The jury acquitted within an hour. Those text messages go off the server in 3 years. Now, I ask the proponents of the bill, not all of them that testified, but I have asked the proponents of the bill, what about that? What is the plan? When an allegation is made 10, 12, 14, 15, 18, 20 years down the road, and the handwritten notated book is gone, what's the plan? And there isn't one. The bill is predicated on the rock-solid foundation that all claims that come forward are all true and are all accurate. There is no plan for the destruction of evidence that can refute, corroborate, or deny it. Senator Prezonsky, we think there's good reasons to half pause on this bill. We've always felt that the procedural due process rights in Oregon are not adequate for the accused in the state. There is a bill that will enhance them with recorded grand juries. It hasn't crossed the line yet. So one reason we see for this body to exercise caution and not move immediately is we don't know what's going to happen with that bill. But Oregon is different from most states. Oregon doesn't have unanimous jury verdicts. The only other state that joins us is Louisiana. There's 10-2 jury verdicts in this state. All other 48 states are unanimous, and that is a big deal. Practitioners will tell you most convictions on these charges are 10-2. We don't have rights to depose as some states do. We don't have grand juries. We don't have preliminary hearings in the state. So we feel that there is a lot of reasons for caution, and a few more, Senator Prezonsky, and then I'll be done. I know that there's been a comparison between the statute of limitations in Oregon and other states. When we haven't done an exhaustive 50-state review, and I don't want to suggest that we have, but we have gone into some of those other state laws. They draw a distinction that Oregon doesn't do, some of those states. Some of those states distinguish between what they call violent rape and what they call non-consensual rape. And they extend the limitation period for the violent rape, but not for the non-consensual rape. And the violent rape they've identified as serious physical injury or use of a dangerous or deadly weapon. Oregon doesn't create that distinction. Oregon, a rape is a rape. So if it's unconsensual, it's a rape one. If it's violent, it's a rape one. So some states do distinguish between violent rape, nonviolent rape. Washington has a curious thing. The state just in our north, if you report within a year, they'll give you an extended limitation period of 10 years. But if you don't report within a year, then it's only 3. We don't really endorse that view, but we note that it's present, and I think there's one other state that does that. And I think it's Indiana that just passed a law that would extend the limitation period if there's corroborating evidence of guilt, such as a confession, but otherwise it would require some corroboration of guilt. We'd also note that this bill that's before you is a little different than in other states. It includes sex abuse one. Sex abuse one is identified as sexual contact, which is identified as touching, and it needs to be done for the purposes of sexual arousal on an intimate body part. But that's not identified by case law as requiring a touch on genitalia or the breasts. It can be any intimate body part identified by the victim as an intimate body part. People have been convicted for sex abuse one for nibbling on an ear. And this bill includes sex abuse one as extending the limitation. So we think that this bill also is in a different posture than some of these other laws that people have compared Oregon to. So I'll truncate my comments from there. Senator Przonski, happy to answer any questions.
Chair Przonski, Vice Chair Cruz, members of the committee, my name is Tom Cermak. I am presently the executive director of the Marion County Public Defender's Office. I have been a criminal defense lawyer since 1980. I have been a public defender since 1980. I've been a public defender. I've been a criminal defense lawyer since 1978. I presently am also a member of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. Been a member since 1978, but not long enough to memorize the name. I was here for this testimony. I have spoken with the victims before. Ms. Meyer indicated that we were sort of diametrically opposed, opposite camps. That's not true. Defense lawyers do not think of victims as the enemy or people that we need to somehow discredit or disenfranchise. As I listened to these stories, I noted that while it is true that the system failed, most of the victims who spoke very eloquently here, it was not the lack of the statute of limitation. It wasn't the statute of limitations that caused them to do that. The system failed them in other ways. We don't have a six-year statute of limitations. We have a six-year statute of limitations that allows for other extraordinary cases. What happened to the young lady who was raped by the babysitter's boyfriend? Were that charge brought today, the statute of limitations would not bar that. That said, the purpose of the statute of limitations is not to protect victims. The purpose of the statute, or to disenfranchise victims, it is to assure that justice is done, because that's what the criminal justice system and this body is about, making sure that justice is done. The statute of limitations recognizes that evidence is corrupted over time. Allowances are made for the extraordinary cases. We oppose this bill. I oppose this bill because it goes too far. It is too general. It allows for the broad case, the 19-year-old girl who says by the time before she's 30, I decided that touching was inappropriate and that he did it for a sexual intent, and I didn't intend for him to do it, and I'm bringing those charges now. Sex abuse cases, because no one expects physical evidence, are the most hard to disprove. This statute would allow that to be brought 12 years later, when the memories, which is what everything, what that is what's relied upon, are so corrupted that no one knows what the truth is. I urge the court, or urge this body to, if nothing else, have that work group to make sure that the constellation of statutes that govern statute of limitations is appropriate to the needs not only of the victim community, but also of the criminal justice community and the statewide community. Because when a person is wrongly accused, it is a citizen of Oregon who is wrongly accused. This body needs to minimize that evil while recognizing and taking steps to protect the evil of the unfortunately disenfranchised victim. That's all I have, unless you have questions.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Gelser first.
Thank you, Mr. Przonski. I just was hung up by something that you said, Gail. It's hard for me to accept the idea that there's a distinction between violent rape and nonviolent rape. Rape is an act of violence, so I can't imagine any rape that isn't violent. I just wanted to add that to the...
Chair Przonski, Senator Gelser, I was noting other state laws that apparently make this distinction on their laws. One is a rape one, one is a rape two. We certainly weren't proposing that distinction.
Well, I'm glad we don't have that here because all rape is violent.
Right. Senator Thatcher.
You said, Gail, what's the plan? Well, you brought forward some situations where you demonstrated that the claim was false, and it seems like where the prosecution actually did push forward, the jury rejected that. So there are still other checks in the system. And so, one, if it was extended to 20 years, there would have to be something. There would have to be something really big for a prosecutor to go forward with it and be believed by the jury. It just seems like it's not a slam dunk.
Chair Pozonski, Senator Thatcher, that's our concern. Those text messages would not be there 12 years later, 10 years later. They're just not. They go off the server. You can't get them from Verizon.
Right. Let me correct myself. Yeah. I'm talking about what the prosecution has to bring. They would not be bringing the text messages. They would have to prove something else outside of that, and notwithstanding the existence of the text messages at that point. But it seems like they would still have a big burden of proof, especially as it wears on in time. And so I think just by simply saying that the evidence becomes stale, well, not always. And I know we do allow certain, we allow for certain exceptions when there's DNA evidence, but as we have heard, there's not always DNA evidence available, and other things are available, and there's other things that can come forward that could, you know, create the case or not. And it seems like that's what's at issue.
And Chair Pozonski, Senator Thatcher, I think you're right on the rub. Is like, would the government present a case when it really is 18 years down the road? He said, she said, no other evidence. And we do see those being brought today. So the charges were brought against the gentleman who did go into the dorm room, and the allegation was, I was unconscious, and he was saying, no, she was conscious. That was the case. If that allegation were raised 15 years later, I believe the same charges would be brought. The difference is the text messages would be gone. And that's where we see the divide. There's just not the ability to recreate the evidence that exists when there's a prompt report versus when there's a delayed one.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2317. I'm going to open a work session on 2317. Now, there's been some questions and issues that have been raised. I've spoken to numerous individuals who are witnesses today in my office as well as other times with other people. One of the questions that came up was the reason that we have looked at and why the House passed 12 years. It was a suggestion that I had made to the President's office that we needed to take a step process instead of going to 20, because we did not have an interim work group during the interim to come up with whether that was an appropriate number. The 12 years was a stopgap for the purpose of opening, extending the current statute of limitations, and at the same time setting the framework for a work group that will include members of the Department of Justice, Oregon District Attorneys Association, Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, law enforcement, a rape victim advocate, and others that we deem that are appropriate to have the deliberative, objective discussions as determining what is appropriate. One of the things that came up today was that at least one individual feels that the work group is limited to 20 years. The work group is not limited to any specific time. They will come back with what they feel is the most appropriate. If it's greater than 12 years, then we will consider whatever that is. Would it be 20, 25, or without any? This is an area that I believe is important, that we have that objective, deliberative approach in looking at our criminal justice system as to what we can actually do within those bounds. Now, Ms. Tudor asked as to the passion, what would make me, I guess, understand hers. I fully appreciate where you're at. What I can tell you is that when my sister was murdered, I learned of that. Age 18, I took on the task of identifying her at the morgue after being shot in the face and shot point blank in the back. I can tell you what the memory is. It's still there. I still feel it. But I don't feel your pain because I don't know what you went through, and I would never, never put myself in that position. As the chair of a judiciary committee, and this is the part that is sometimes hard for people to understand, I feel that that we have to go through a deliberative process, ensuring that we're doing right. I don't want to see this continue for you to have to come back. And I will tell you, I never believed I ever told you you had to come back. What I remember in that conversation, you told me you would be coming back. And I told you, if you need to come back, come back. My goal for this work group is to find out what where we should be. And if it's beyond 20 years, it's beyond 20 years. And that's what I will bring back at the for the 2016 session. The goal, and I've asked Senator Thatcher to sit on the work group with me because we would have a quorum issue of having more individuals from the committee. The two of us will represent the Senate Judiciary Committee with the various components of the individuals I said that will be there. And we will deliberate, work through this. We'll determine based on knowing that there's the rape kit issue. I don't know what, if any, that's going to have an impact on the statute of limitations for non-DNA cases. But I believe that's an element that we need to put on the table to see if there's other forensic evidence that we need to take in consideration in establishing what is going to be the appropriate length or the best length of statute of limitations we can come up with. But whatever comes from that group, we will bring back. My charge to the state police has been that they needed to get their work done on the investigation that they're doing as to trying to get detailed information from local law enforcement as well as prosecution offices as to what is the state of rape kits that have been taken in that have not been processed. I don't know what, if any, impact it will have because we have already noted that in this state we already require, or excuse me, not require, we already have no statute of limitations in cases of rape or other sex, first-degree crimes where there is, in fact, DNA evidence. But as we all know, there is more evidence besides DNA that can come out of a rape kit. So I want that to be on the table. I want to make sure that when we come back in February of this next year, we have the best information we can have, and we can be assured that we're doing the best we can for Oregon. And so the 12 years here is a means to go forward, knowing that we need to go forward, but how far up? We won't know until we have the work group. I told Senator Thatcher that I was going to put this out there so we can have this discussion during the work session. And so if there's other questions or comments that we want to put on the record, please do so.
Okay, Mr. Chair. There was concern, and it was mentioned in previous testimony today, that you were interested in looking at all statutes of limitation, but this is separate. You do want to look at all statutes of limitation, I believe. I think you've said that on the record. But this does not depend on coming to an agreement on all the other statutes of limitation, correct?
That is correct. Basically, the way I see this, based on since we've had the conversations and the discussions of call in the, that have occurred in the building with the leadership, this would be kind of a two-stage process. The first-degree sex crimes are the ones that we're going to focus on. That's the top priority. That's the one I want to be able to have the work group to report back by the end of this year, so we will be able to have the time to actually put the measure together for the 2016 session. I also believe it's important, imperative. We've heard testimony today how long it has been in this state that we've had this, the review of our statute of limitations. I've asked for many years to actually have a special convening group that would be looking at all of our statute, all of our statutes in the criminal code, because it's been since the early 70s and those were adopted, and many things have occurred over those 40 plus years. But that is a project that's ongoing, that would be ongoing for multiple years. And one of the areas I wanted to have this discussion was with the Oregon Law Commission. They rejected it because they just felt that this was not an area. So instead, this is going to be the next area of taking a large section of our criminal statutes and looking at. And so that's how I see it at this point, is that we will have a continuation of that work group to continue to look at the other statute of limitations, but the top priority for what we're dealing with in 2015 will be the first-degree sex crimes.
Okay, and there's also a concern that coming forward with the 12 years today, that it would just be a way of placating, if you will, certain groups and then not addressing it further. And so you are assuring us that with this work group, there will be something exceeding the 12 years, not going to go down, and it will go, it'll be brought forward during the February session by the judiciary, if not members who want to bring this forward, because I guarantee you I will if work group does not.
No, we will. I mean, I would assume that this will be a product of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and that's how it would be introduced. But if you want to do a member bill that we have individuals sign on to it, that's fine with me as well. Issue of this is not a smokescreen. I mean, the bottom line is I've told everyone I've been very consistent on this as to what needs to happen as to having the work group. These are individuals that are practitioners that are very versed as to the workings of the criminal justice system, and I expect them to come forward with their best effort, and we'll be part of that to help assist and work through that. And whatever comes up, if it's more than 12, we are going to bring it forward. And I have no indication that it's going to be going backwards, dropping down below 12. Okay?
Well, whatever the work group comes up, well, anyway, I just want to make it clear that if the work does not get done, I will be bringing a bill forward.
I welcome that.
Thank you.
All right. Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that line of questioning. I had a number of those similar questions. I think you know, one of the challenges of serving in a legislative body is we all have our individual druthers about how things would go. It would be my personal preference that we be at 20 years, but I would I appreciated the comments of Brenda Tracy. I don't see that political path for us to get to 20 years this time, and I would hate to see us stick with the six. I think that 12 is vastly better than six. I hope that we'll come back in February and be at 20 or something that, or greater, something that exceeds that. And I appreciate the assurances that this is the beginning rather than the end of the conversation. And I appreciate that Senator Thatcher will be part of that work group, and look forward to continuing this discussion in the interim, and hope that we are moving up.
All right, thank you. Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. As you know, Senator Courtney and I had a bill for 20, and I personally think that would be a good starting point. having said that, I know the political realities of this building, and I also want to say, Mr. Chair, that you and I have had a long relationship, and when you say something, you stand by what you say, and based on that, and based on the fact that, and I do know there's two things, there's statute and there's statute. I'm assuming we're looking at the broader picture, probably for the next long session, not for the short session, and you'll be focused on this statute for the short session.
That the first degree sex crimes, the mission is to have something by the end of the year.
And I agree on taking a bigger look, but that's more of a long session of issue. We understand that.
That's correct.
So it will be, we'll do one thing and then we'll do the other, and that's absolutely fine. 12 is better than six, there's no question. And it is my hope that we get to something much broader than this, because I think it's appropriate. I think these victims need to have closure, and even with 12, it doesn't get us where we need to be. So I'm relying on you, and because I've been on many work groups with you, and they're fair work groups, and I look forward to the product that you come up with during the interim.
Thank you. Make a motion.
Okay. Based on that, Mr. Chair, I will move House Bill 2317 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2317A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Burdick will be noted as excused from the vote since she had other duties to do. All right. With
Terry, you should carry this.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll carry it, and we'll be putting stuff on the record as well there. All right. Any other stuff that we need to do? So, again, just to summarize, as this morning regarding the work session, we are carrying over till tomorrow House Bill 2357A. And House Bill 3093A. With that, we're adjourned until tomorrow at 8 o'clock.